Hi, this is Mike Bolton, Opera Philadelphia's Vice President of Community Programs, and thank you for joining me for this podcast on Giuseppe Verdi's monumental Don Carlo. Our upcoming production features a spectacular cast, including Dimitri Pitas, Leah Crocetto, Michelle DeYoung, Troy Cook, Morris Robinson, and Philadelphia's own Eric Owens, making his role debut as King Philip II. The Opera Philadelphia Orchestra and chorus are under the direction of Maestro Corrado Rovaris. The opera is about a love triangle between a son, a stepmother, and a father, the influence of the church on the reign of King Philip II, the fight for freedom, and the measures we take to protect the ones we love or destroy those who get in the way. For this podcast, we'll talk about the grand opera style and Verdi's challenges with reigning in this epic work, the historical family headed by King Philip II, the opera's plot, and the great cast and artistic team who are bringing this opera to life for Opera Philadelphia's production, which runs from April 24th through May 3rd at the Academy of Music in Philadelphia. Called by some scholars as Verdi's greatest opera, Don Carlo was created as a true grand opera, the fabled French operatic style. If grand opera can trace its beginnings back to Jean-Baptiste Lully's tragedies En Musique, and were built on the foundation of Christoph Willibald Gluck's heroic operas, the style would come into its own in the early 1830s. What are the hallmarks of that style? Well, it must be in French, with accompanied recitative, compared to melodrama components from serious operas or dialogue-driven scenes from pieces presented at the Opéra Comique. It must have an historical narrative. It should feature melodramatic or even violent situations, have a controversial theme, a five-act structure compared to the more common three-act structure, a large cast with full chorus and large orchestra, a ballet in either acts two or three, show-stopping bravura arias extended over a large vocal range, and a tableau vivant, a frozen moment where the stage looks like a living painting, and pageant-like visual scenes. Grand opera was the style of Meyerbeer, Alévi, Aubert, and surprisingly, the late works of the Italian maestro Gioacchino Rossini in his Siege of Corinth and William Tell. The subject of Don Carlo was first suggested as a potential opera to Verdi as early as 1850. But if at first it didn't inspire him, he would eventually come back to it 15 years later for a commission for a grand opera at the Paris Opera. Initially, Verdi claimed that he was retired and wasn't interested. The man who had written one or two operas a year was winding down his career. His last new opera was La Forza del Destino, which premiered 4 years earlier in 1862. Then, he said he wouldn't work at the opera again after the difficult process of creating his last grand opera there for that theater, Les Vêpres les Siciliens, which was in 1855. Then he said he could be interested if the right libretto came along. He considered setting King Lear, one of his lifelong desires to set, and Cleopatra. But he was thrilled with Don Carlos. Based on a play by Friedrich Schiller, the opera would premiere in 1867. Verdi struggled with writing the opera and was late in delivering the required ballet. Schiller's epic play had turned into one incredibly grand opera. Working alongside the team at the Opéra, a duet between Elizabeth and Eboli was cut, another duet for Carlos and Philip was cut, and more. Still, after the first musical run-through, the opera clocked in at 3 hours and 47 minutes. In Paris, the duration for an opera was fixed, and all operas must be finished by midnight, as the last train to the suburbs left the station at 12:35. Additionally, the opera couldn't start before 7 p.m., so everyone could have dinner. So, more cuts needed to be made. When the newly trimmed Don Carlos opened on March 11, 1867, Verdi wrote to a friend saying that it wasn't a success, and he worried how much more editing would be done to the piece after he left Paris. Critics complained the opera lacked everything that made Verdi special, like gorgeous melodies, a preposterous claim today about the piece. And they said that he aimed at being too Wagnerian. After performances in 1869, the Paris Opera would not perform Don Carlos again until modern times. Verdi would continue to revise the opera. Various revisions premiered in Italian in 1867 in Bologna, in Naples in 1872, and if Verdi cut the first act for a premiere in Milan in 1884, he would restore it in 1886 when the opera premiered in another revised version in Modena. The opera has one of the greatest librettos ever set by Verdi. And if you'd like to read it, you can find it on the Opera Philadelphia website at operaphila.org in the In Schools section of the website. While it might not be concise, the libretto is fascinating in its look at power, struggle, corruption, and love. But the opera, like the play by Schiller, was inspired by a historical family. King Philip II was the son of Charles V, the Holy Roman Emperor, and the great-grandson of Ferdinand and Isabella, who famously helped fund Christopher Columbus's sail across the sea, during which he inadvertently discovered America. Spain was the most powerful country in the world at the time, but after years of overspending in a quest to maintain an opulent lifestyle, attempting to thwart the expansion of Protestantism, preserving Spain's territories, and after various military campaigns gone awry, the country went bankrupt several times during Philip's reign. He built El Escorial, the royal palace, which also included a monastery, prison, and library. Situated approximately 30 miles outside of the capital of Madrid, it protected Philip and his family from the outside world and also prevented them from interacting with the Spanish people. Escorial is a fortress so huge it contains 9 towers, 9 organs, 16 patios, 73 statues, 86 sets of stairs, 88 fountains, 300 cells, 1,200 windows, more than 1,600 paintings, 2,673 doors, 15 miles of corridors, and much, much more. So how did Philip get away with it? Philip and his family were of the House of Habsburg, one of the richest and most important royal houses in all of Europe. Its dominance and alliances through dynastic marriages were interwoven all throughout Europe, parts of Asia, and even to the Second Mexican Empire. The Habsburgs' influence was such that only members of the family sat on the throne of the Holy Roman Empire from 1438 to 1740. Unfortunately, the Spanish contingent of the Habsburgs felt that the best spouse for a Habsburg was another Habsburg. Marriages between first cousins or uncle and niece were commonplace in the family. Case in point is King Philip II's son, Carlos, Prince of Asturias, the Don Carlo of our opera. He had only 6 great-great-grandparents instead of the maximum 16. He had only 4 great-grandparents, whereas most of us have 8. 2 of those great-grandparents were half-siblings. His maternal grandmother and his paternal grandfather were siblings, and his maternal grandfather and paternal grandmother were also siblings, thus making his parents, Philip and Manuela of Portugal, virtual genetic half-siblings. All of this preservation of the family lineage wreaked havoc on Carlo. Physically deformed and mentally unstable, he was known for abusing servants and animals. This wild behavior and the physical ailments may have been due to this inbreeding. He was originally betrothed to Elizabeth of Valois of Spain, but it was decided that Carlos was unsuitable for marriage. There was never any love lost between Carlos and his father, And Carlos confessed to wanting to kill Philip, and after an attempt to flee Spain to join an anti-Philip revolt in the Spanish-controlled Netherlands, Philip imprisoned Carlos, where he died 6 months later at the age of 23. Elizabeth of Valois would ultimately become Philip's third wife when she was just 14 years old. The two actually had a happy marriage, and Elizabeth was known for her kind and compassionate relationship with Carlos. One other fascinating historical figure in the opera is Princess Eboli, based on Ana de Mendoza y de la Cerda, Princess of Eboli, Duchess of Pastrana. Historically, she was friends with Elizabeth, but entered a convent for 3 years after the death of her first husband, Ruy Gomez da Silva, whom she married when she was only 13. After leaving the convent, she returned to court and was arrested for betraying state secrets in 1579. She would spend the last 13 years of her life in prison. Finally, we can't talk about Spain during this time and not talk about the Spanish Inquisition. They maintained Catholicism in Spain at the time. Jews and Muslims were forced to convert to Catholicism, and if they didn't convert, they were forced to leave Spain. And if you didn't leave, and if you didn't convert, or if it seemed that you weren't fervent enough in your conversion to Catholicism, you were executed. It's likely that between 3,000 and 5,000 people were put to death during the Spanish Inquisition in rather horrific ways. And torture was not definitively abolished until 1834. Next up, we'll talk a little bit about the opera's plot and this production. Opera Philadelphia will produce the four-act Milan version of Don Carlo for its performances beginning April 24th. Our characters in the opera are Don Carlo, a tenor, Elizabeth of Valois, a soprano, King Philip II, bass, Princess Eboli, mezzo-soprano, Rodrigo, Marquis de Poza, baritone, and the Grand Inquisitor, a bass. Don Carlo and Elizabeth of Valois, Princess of France, are betrothed. However, for reasons of state, the princess is obliged to marry Carlo's father, King Philip II of Spain. Carlo confides his love to Rodrigo, Marquis of Poza, who advises him to forget Elizabeth and ask for the governorship of Flanders, where he may ease the hardships of Spain's reign. King Philip refuses his son's request in great anger. Meanwhile, the Princess Eboli, Elizabeth's lady-in-waiting, whose passionate love for Carlo is unreturned, informs the king of Carlo's love for Elizabeth. Philip orders his rebellious son thrown into prison and questions the Grand Inquisitor on the propriety of asking for a death sentence for his son. The Inquisitor demands instead that the king denounce Rodrigo, a greater menace to the empire because of his liberalism. But Philip refuses. Philip goes to bat for Rodrigo rather than going to bat for his own son. Thoroughly embittered, the wound becomes that much deeper when the king discovers that Elizabeth is in love with Carlo. Eboli, who's not only Philip's lover but also has told him about Elizabeth's affection for Carlos, repents her rash confession and determines to rescue Carlo from prison. She accomplishes this mission in the confusion that ensues after the treacherous shooting of Rodrigo, who has been marked for death as he visits Carlo in prison. Carlo and Elizabeth then meet in the monastery cloister, where a monk at the tomb of Charles V steps forward to rescue Carlo from the pursuing king and inquisitor. Verdi makes each of these characters unique in their own way, and each is extremely demanding in their own way, too. For instance, Elizabeth needs to be able to sing long, lyrical lines, delicate piano phrases at the top of her range, and have a strong chest voice. Her music is passionate but delicate. Only in the last scene of the opera does Verdi show how Elizabeth has matured from a young girl into a woman. Eboli, perhaps Verdi's most musically diverse character in the opera, must be able to sing Rossini-like coloratura, but also fearlessly hurl her voice at the top and bottom of her range through a large orchestration. Dramatically, she's a multifaceted character, and her music reflects this, from the veil song at her entrance to the pathetic and desperate O Don Fatale in the third act. She is a vocal chameleon, loving and passionate, and insinuating and threatening in the garden scene with Carlos. Rodrigo, Marquis of Posa, dramatically plays both sides of the fence, Carlos's friend and Philip's confidant. He needs to be charming, empathetic, strong and defiant, and calculating. Like Elizabeth, he's required to sing extremely long lyrical lines and must have an extremely good trill. Carlo goes from desperate outcry to desperate outcry, caught in the middle between love for a woman who is now his mother, love for his country but desire to free Flanders from his father's tyrannical rule, a threatening proposition from a woman he doesn't love, and more. The Grand Inquisitor is a very brief role that makes a huge impression. Barely on stage for 10 minutes, the bass singing the evil old man must have an ease at the very top of his range while being able to sink authoritatively to some of the lowest notes written in all of opera. King Philip must tower above the cast. He's a man in charge of a dynastic empire. He suffered through political mishaps and governing over a crumbling nation. He's a figurehead for a country, but a puppet for the Grand Inquisitor, who perhaps is really running Spain through manipulation, force, and fear. Let's listen to Verdi's entrance music for Philip. At once, there's a lumbering quality, almost as if he limps. It's not a confident gait as he walks onto the stage, but a man mired in suspicion. As he arrives on scene, it's clear that he's not celebrated by his people, but feared. Yet, when he's alone in his study, after he has Elizabeth's jewelry case with Carlos's picture in it, he is devastated. After several years of marriage, he's crushed to discover that Elizabeth is in love with his son, and she's never loved him. The heaviness, loneliness, and desolation he feels is all in Verdi's music. Philadelphia-born and trained Eric Owens makes his role debut as King Philip II with Opera Philadelphia. And here's what he had to say about the role.
I have not performed this role before. It's the first time, and I'm really excited. And it's a dream come true. He's a really sad character. I mean, he's very much alone. And some of it is of his own doing in the way he treats people. But some of it has... I don't know, and I know it's going to be hard to get people to sympathize with him, but I mean, there's a tortured soul there.
And one of the most dramatically compelling and hair-raising moments in the entire opera is King Philip's interview with the Grand Inquisitor. In this production, played by Mr. Owen's friend and colleague, Morris Robinson. And here's what he had to say about the upcoming stage performances of that scene.
You know, I don't know if this is going to be one of those epic moments, but it feels like it to me. I mean, just being in that space and that energy with Morris, just, I mean, with this voice that is just amazing. And having that to bounce off of and feed off of, it's really exciting, and I can't wait for the people to get there.
Again, the cast for this production includes Dimitri Pitas as Don Carlo, Leah Crocetto as Elizabeth of Valois, Eric Owens as King Philip II, Michelle de Jong as Princess Eboli, Troy Cook as Rodrigo, Marquis de Poza, and Morris Robinson as the Grand Inquisitor. Miss Crocetto, Mr. Young, and Mr. Pitas all make their Opera Philadelphia debuts with this production, and we are extremely excited to have this entire cast on the Academy of Music stage. The production is by Tim Albury, set design by Andrew Lieberman, lighting design by Tom Hasse, and costume design by Constance Hoffman. The set is intriguingly designed. In effect, the cupola of the Escorial Monastery has been set on its side, and the action takes place within that space. And after the auto da fe scene where the heretics are burned, the top of the cupola is in effect burned off, and the ashes of it and the heretics are scattered about the stage. The costumes are reflective of the late 1400s, but with a modern edge. For images of the set and costume designs, visit our website at www.operaphila.org. As we end this podcast for Verdi's Don Carlo, I encourage everyone who's able to see this magnificent opera, this spectacular cast, and this phenomenal Opera Philadelphia production at the glorious Academy of Music. 5 performances only from April 24th through May 3rd. Tickets are on sale now at operaphila.org or at 215-893-1018. For complete information on Don Carlo, the remainder of Opera Philadelphia's 2014-2015 season, which includes the world premiere of Daniel Schneider and Bridget A. Wimberly's Charlie Parker's Yardbird, which stars Lawrence Brownlee and Angela Brown, or if you're looking for more information about the company's 2015-2016 season, which includes productions of Andy a Popera, a world premiere collaboration with Bearded Ladies, Verdi's La Traviata, the East Coast premiere of Jennifer Higdon's Cold Mountain, Strauss's Capriccio, and Donizetti's The Elixir of Love, visit operaphila.org. And don't forget to visit us on Twitter, Instagram, and Facebook at operaphila. If you're attending the performances of Don Carlo, join me, Mike Bolton, for a free preview talk, Opera Overtures, 1 hour before every performance. If you have any questions about this podcast, please email me at outreach@operaphila.org. This is Mike Bolton, and thanks for listening to this podcast, and I hope to see you at the opera.